Welcome to this episode of Meet the Entrepreneur, brought to you by Invest Africa Insights. In this series, we speak to Africa's leading entrepreneurs about the industry-changing businesses they have built, the challenges they have faced along the way, and where they are heading next. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Emeka Ejene, co-founder of GoZem, the company aiming to be Africa's super app. Emeka, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thanks, Eleanor. Great to be here.
So GoZem is a mobility app that you launched in 2018 with your business partner, Raphael Danner, who's based out in Singapore. And the two of you took your experience in the transportation sector, used to work for Uber, and his experience in the East Asian markets to build GoZem based on a model that has worked for Asia's super apps, such as Grab and Gojek. So perhaps we can start there with you telling us just a little bit more about what GoZem is, what you do, and why you looked at that East Asian model.
Sure. So I should say, I guess I should probably say now, Raphael is moving to Africa. He'll be based out of Morocco very soon. So he's had tremendous experience in Singapore that we're now looking forward to him bringing it more physically, I suppose, to the continent here. But to your point, GoZem, I think we say in short, GoZem is Africa's super app. So what we kind of do today, we provide ride hailing services using motorcycle taxis, using tuk-tuks or auto rickshaws, and also cars, right? So we also provide e-commerce and e-commerce delivery services all in one single app. And we do this today across seven cities in West and Central Africa, right? So we focus really on Togo and Benin today. So today users can use GoZem, open up the app and order a motorcycle taxi, a car taxi, a tuk-tuk, order groceries, gas canisters for the kitchen, TVs and other electronics. And that's today. Right. So in the future, we want to roll out additional services. And to your point, we really look at Grab and Gojek as the models of what we're trying to replicate. Right. So I'll just give a bit of background, I suppose. So before GoZem, I actually worked at Uber. And part of my role there was acquiring new drivers, training them, and also launching new cities. Right. So after I left Uber, I started a consultancy called AfriCreate. Part of what I did there was really study and generate research reports around market opportunities, business models, and market entry strategies across Africa, right? So in doing that, it really cemented my viewpoint that, you know, a lot of entrepreneurs I studied, a lot of entrepreneurs I talked to, they focus on business models from the West, whereas business models from the East were actually better suited to African markets. So think about South Asia and also Southeast Asia. Right. So in the process of kind of doing this research, publishing on this, I got connected to Raph. He was living in Singapore at the time. He had a very similar perspective, given his firsthand exposure as a user of Grab and Gojek in that market. And also, he also had strong interest and exposure to Africa, as he also helped Viber, if you remember the app Viber, enter the African markets. So that's kind of how we connected. I think although business models in the US and the UK and Europe tend to be kind of the sexiest, or at least they get the most media attention, if you're in a frontier market or, you know, an emerging market, it's probably the case that what's happening in other frontier and emerging markets are the most relevant for you, right? So for us, why we look at kind of emerging markets, why we look at East Asia specifically, is we think certain characteristics are relevant, certain characteristics of the market, right? So things like distribution channels, things like certain aspects of the culture, and also trends relative to population growth and infrastructure, right? So in terms of distribution, what you see in East Asia, Southeast Asia, especially also South Asia, it's kind of a fragmented retail landscape in terms of physical distribution channels. And in terms of kind of digital distribution channels, you have just lower internet penetration rates and just huge numbers of people offline. So this is very relevant, you know, like I could be describing, you know, various markets in Africa when I say that. In terms of cultural aspects, you have a lot of heterogeneity, right, as far as ethnicity and language. So it's not a monolith. If you look at the US to certain degrees, even UK, it's kind of the entire, you know, America is pretty monolithic. It's one language, some, you know, one culture. Even within a country like Nigeria, even Togo, Benin, you have different ethnicities, different languages. So you have to be able to play and, you know, your marketing, your product has to be appealing to a variety of different people in the same region. And that's, you know, this is true of, you know, Indonesia is a great example. We have this heterogeneity. Besides that, we also think about kind of where population growth is outpacing infrastructural development, right? So, and this is particularly relevant for GoZem. right? So if you think about transportation infrastructure, you have, you know, generally Africa is one of the fastest growing regions in terms of population growth. It's a very young country as well. So you have, and at the same time, you have kind of, you know, not a lot of options in terms of infrastructure in general, but also transport infrastructure specifically. There's no tube, there's no subway, there's not a lot of public transport opportunities. So in our markets, you have people that are looking for reliable, convenient alternatives that are also affordable and cheap, right? So you have things like private taxis, but they're relatively expensive for the average person. So that, you know, for us specifically, it created the opportunity, and it's a very similar, you know, rolling out the same playbook on this characteristics to what Gojek did specifically, where we're able to run a super app playbook based on transport ride hailing and specifically motorcycle ride hailing as the key core asset of what we're building. Right. So, and the interesting thing there is because it's, you know, relatively lower priced, it's certainly just higher frequency of use, where the same person can use the same, you know, use the app, use the same ride hailing service for motorcycles, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 times a day. Right. It's not uncommon. It's very accessible. So it's something that we thought made a lot of sense for the market. And we decided to bring it to Africa. And looking at Africa, the real opportunity for us is kind of the Francophone zone, right? So I think when people talk about Africa, they tend to talk and think about Nigeria, Kenya, South Africa, Ghana to some degree, right? So in terms of Sub-Saharan Africa. So that's kind of where folks really think about Africa. That's where a lot of the attention is. But there's really some, for us, we saw a very real untapped opportunity to really roll the super app concept out in Francophone Africa. Number one, it's just not as the users in those markets are very much more underserved, right? So when you think about a super app, it's really, at least how we think about a super app, it's really coming in, developing a brand where you have not a lot of strong competitors in various verticals, and offering unique value to the user that they're able to rely on you to provide this breadth of services, right? So if you look at some of other markets, you know, you probably like South Africa, for example, you probably have some strong competitors in certain verticals, maybe in Nigeria as well. But if you look at Togo, Benin, Cameroon, Ivory Coast, Senegal, there's maybe not as many strong competitors across verticals. So for us, it's just the perfect target market. And if you look at, for us, we also look at this as a zone. Right. So it's not really, whereas if you look at Nigeria, you're really looking at the country. For us, we're from day one, we've been thinking about Francophone Africa, West and Central Africa as a zone. Right. So for sure, if you look at Lagos has 20 million people, and that's more people alone for one city than Benin as a country. And also Togo, you put Togo and Benin together, has less population than Lagos alone. So we don't look at, you know, cities or countries. We really think about the zone. And when you think about that Western Central Africa zone, it's 200 million people. So it rivals in Nigeria that cannot be ignored. And it's also relatively simple to navigate, right? So it's only two currencies. It's not, you know, it's not like you have 20 different currencies. Only two currencies, the West African franc and the Central African franc, two central banks. And there's just a lot of freedom of movement with some of the accords the different countries have. So that's part of why we're excited about the opportunity. I think, you know, what we also know is models in general, business models that create jobs and just economic opportunities for micro entrepreneurs. These are well suited for African markets. Not only are they likely to scale quickly, but they can also create significant impact on the community as well. So that's something we're interested in doing. We want to just give global levels of services to our users. We want to help our champions, which are drivers, just have significant stable earning power. And we also just want to generally have, you know, our communities more robust. You know, some people say Francophone Africa is just less energetic than some Anglophone markets. But we want to introduce a bit of that energy, entrepreneurial energy into the marketplace as well.
That makes sense. And a lot there for us to talk about. Just first of all, just for our listeners who maybe don't know, could you just explain briefly what a super app is for those people who aren't so familiar with the sort of the Asian market with the WeChats and the Grabs of the world?
Yeah, so it's a good question. I would say it's a super app as a platform that offers a variety of different services, sometimes completely unrelated, in one single app. right? So WeChat is a great example out of China where users there can, you know, pay bills, they could message each other, they could order transport, they could order Groupon type services. So just a variety of different services in one app. There's different types of ways, models you get to a super app. WeChat, for example, started with a messaging product, right? So where users use the same app every day to message each other. And because of that frequency, WeChat was able to leverage, layer on other other products to that user base, right? If you think about Grab and Gojek, they started off Gojek specifically started off with a motorcycle ride-hailing product and layered on other services. Grab similar, except Grab, I believe, started with cars and layered on other services. So you have this kind of idea. You have a core asset or advantage that you gain frequency of use with and create a user base with, and then you leverage that to provide other services to the same users. Why is that interesting? It's interesting, number one, because you save on customer acquisition costs, right? So you don't have to acquire new users for each service you roll out. You have the existing user base, you now leverage that to other users. So it actually helps on both the customer acquisition cost side of the equation and also the long-term value side of the lifetime value of the customer, right? Because not only do you have a lifetime value for people that take motorcycle taxis, but as they grow, get earning power, maybe they'll be our next taxi users. We also get a cut of their share of wallet if they want to order groceries, for example. So it really helps on both sides of the equation just to scale. And the interesting thing, I think, is that you were starting to see, at least before COVID, this is an idea that was starting to go into the Western markets, right? So Uber, famously, I think just about a year ago, you had Uber CEO position Uber as your app for everyday services, right? So Uber was moving in this direction as well, not only providing taxi services, but also with Jump, which they now have sold, but with micromobility services, and also food delivery as well. So they were moving that direction. Interesting thing now, you still see Snapchat is also moving in this direction, where they're also opening their app up to different developers to have different kind of high frequency of use engagement services within the same Snapchat app.
And presumably companies that follow this kind of model also end up with a phenomenal amount of data at their disposal.
Absolutely. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, if you are running the payments and you are also running the services and you know where people are moving and you know what they're buying, you've got a huge amount of information at your fingertips on consumer behavior. No.
Exactly. So I think you end up knowing a lot about your user base, and the powerful thing about that is you're able to serve them and create unique value that's very hard to compete with, right? So if I'm able to have some insight into your payment flow, I know perhaps around every Friday you buy groceries, I can create new value by perhaps offering you a specific coupon for your next grocery purchase that if I didn't have that information, perhaps it would be hard for me to create that value for you.
So your core asset where you started is in transportation. And obviously some of those brands you've just been speaking about, like Uber, but also Bolt, have been also trying to move into Africa markets, as you very well know, because you helped them do it. So how have you been competing with those major brands in that space, in your core space?
Yeah, no, so it's a great question. I think our strategy for competition there is not to compete. Right, that's our first strategy. Again, so I think there's this idea of Africa and this reality of Africa, right? So again, for a lot of people, you say, you know, people say they're operating in Africa, but they're not operating in Africa. They're operating in Nigeria, South Africa, or Kenya, right? So, and this is kind of true, although I suppose Uber now is in Ivory Coast as well, but largely for Bolt and Uber, you know, where they operate in is the kind of the big markets that we're not in. You know, and they're not really Francophone West Africa, Francophone Central Africa. So these are kind of wide open spaces for us. You know, so I'll say, to answer your question, our strategy for competition is to kind of just have the freedom to create a brand where other big players are not. Eventually, we'll meet in the marketplace, and by then, we want to have learned a lot from our initial experience, created strong playbooks, created strong networks around our users. Right. Also have a strong base of services in our app already to be able to compete. Right? So that's how we think about it. I think, you know, I have tremendous respect for what Uber has done. I have tremendous, I think Bolt is a phenomenal company, right? So even myself, I'm a big user of Bolt when I'm in markets like Nigeria that goes and doesn't operate in. So I have tremendous respect for what they do as companies. And, you know, for us, it's not to, you know, to go head on in competition right now. These are tremendous, big, well-funded strategic players. So we want to carve out our own part of Africa. You know, they can have their, you know, the big, you know, splashy Africa, South Africa, Kenya, Nigeria. I think we're content to build out a strong, profitable business in West and Central Francophone Africa.
Presumably another part of that strategy is also in this expansion of services beyond beyond where you started. So if you could tell us a bit more about what kind of areas you're expanding into. I think you've begun integrating a payment system. So perhaps you can tell us a bit more about those sort of new services that you're building in.
Yeah, no, so it's another good question. I would say if you think about, you know, you mentioned the core asset being transport. So for us, it's really step one is to leverage the core transport asset, right? So we have ride hailing, and really part of, you know, our DNA as a company when we say ride hailing, really mean a motorcycle ride hailing, right? We also have tuk-tuks and tricycles, but the core, our core business is motorcycle taxi ride hailing. So we're able to do other things very easily, and we've started to do some of these things, right? So at the end of July, we rolled out our grocery delivery product, right? So where we partnered with a few big supermarket chains in Togo and Benin, and also some smaller individual, you know, micro entrepreneurs as well, who've listed on the Gozem shopping service as vendors, right? So we've already started doing that. And that's just relatively new, so at the end of July. So to your question in terms of what's coming next, in terms of delivery services, there's a few different verticals we see. The next one that's big and important standalone is kind of a restaurant, right? So how you order a meal at a restaurant, how you order hot food is different than how you might order, you know, a box of cereal, right? So ordering a box of cereal is very similar to how you order a TV in terms of the interface in the app, right? But when you go to how you order food, hot food, you have to create a separate menu experience inside the app. But very simply, the next product that's interesting as a standalone product there is a restaurant delivery. The next thing we want to do is kind of parcel delivery. Beyond that, things that are on our roadmap are pharmaceuticals and healthcare delivery, and also kind of a courier service where you could order a driver to do something you need to get done. Perhaps to, for example, you want to pick up your laundry at the laundromat or something to that degree, or maybe you're a business that wants to drop off a letter to another business. So we want to think about on the roadmap for us is a kind of a courier service. So that's kind of just how we think about leveraging our transport asset. We've started with the ride hailing, leverage that for grocery and delivery. And very soon in the next month or so, we'll roll out restaurant delivery and parcel delivery. To your point about the next phase of our business is the kind of payments or, you know, internally kind of the Gozem wallet, right? So we have the structure today, but we're really waiting to partner with folks to get a license and get, you know, just ensure that we're in line with the regulatory regime in our markets we operate in to roll out a full wallet experience. So part of what we want to do there for sure is peer-to-peer payments or sending money to, you know, to your family, to your parents, whatever, just sending money between peers. But we also think about bill payments, right? So also, you know, if you want to pay your, if you want to buy credit from the telco, you want to pay a specific bill, we want to integrate those vendors in the app and have give you the ability to pay them. But also we want to integrate with kind of, you know, some of the banks as well. I think banks are very interested to work with us as we grow our pool, our database of this kind of sector that's untapped. These informal drivers, you know, champions, Zimmy John men, right? So we want to just have a robust wallet service that allows you to do just a variety of things, just to transact locally in a variety of ways. So send money to your peers, pay with businesses, just you know, if you want to interact just with the what's around you, right? So we've started on that aspect, started talking to different vendors, but for us that's you know, it's when you think about money, right? It's a regulatory regime, so we're working on the licensing there.
And has coronavirus accelerated your timeline at all on that sort of diversification of services? Have you been finding the impact on the business, in particular on the sort of transport side?
Yeah, exactly. So I think for us, it's coronavirus has had an impact on our business for sure. Across the cities we operate in Togo and Benin, we've seen different degrees of lockdowns and curfews. And there's just been a general sense of uncertainty that's affected our transport business, right? So this was most pronounced in Q2. And I think if you look at Uber's financial statements or Lyft's financial statements, and what you see those players saying is in Q2, their ride-hailing business was down 70 to 80%, right? So for us, thankfully, the impact hasn't been as pronounced as that, but we certainly had a negative business to our transport operations as people just didn't move around as much. But, you know, to your point, on the plus side, it's really allowed us to accelerate our product roadmap. We've, you know, I haven't mentioned this, but we also, one of the first things we did was to roll out a B2B cargo delivery service, right? So historically, GoZim has offered a B2C personal transport services. But during Corona, we also rolled out a B2B cargo delivery services where customers can order in the app. It's an app on, you know, just Trisic Bagage in French, I suppose. But so it's kind of it's hard to describe, but a cargo kind of a tuk-tuk that is built for kind of commercial transport, right? So a three-wheeled small vehicle for commercial transport. We rolled that out during Corona. We also rolled out our grocery delivery product during Corona, and we rolled out, we're still in the middle of rolling out e-commerce delivery. So it's rolled out in Togo and coming soon to Benin. Right. So certainly Corona has kind of accelerated our product roadmap. We've diversified relative to, you know, just away from transport, away from personal transport to kind of transport and logistics, but also to other services as well, grocery delivery and e-commerce delivery. And so it's now we're, you know, for us, it's just we're moving closer towards our goal of offering that swath of diversified services and not simply relying on B2C. And it's the same kind of, you know, if you look at kind of what Grab and Gojek has done, it's actually a very similar trajectory. I think whether or not Corona, you know, had came or not, we would still be doing the same things. It's just that we're doing some of these things quicker than intended. But in some cases, we're seeing that it's actually, there's a positive impact there. I think, you know, part of the thesis was that customers will see value, especially in markets like Togo and Benin, they will see value from being able to do different things in the same app, right? So unlike a Nigeria, unlike a Kenya, these users are underserved digitally, right? There's not a variety of local content apps, local content being provided by apps locally, right? Except maybe for the Facebook products, right? So what's outside of WhatsApp and Facebook there and Instagram, there's kind of a desert in terms of local content. So when GoZim pops up, GoZim offers ride hailing. Perhaps you have a car, you own transport, but you're not interested. But when GoZim now rolls out a grocery delivery, that kind of becomes interesting for you. When GoZim rolls the e-commerce delivery as well, it kind of becomes interesting. So we have a unique position in our market, and that diversification is really helping us attract a wider pool of users to the app.
If I could then just cast your mind back in time a bit to back when you started, because people are often very keen to hear about fundraising experiences, and it's a very challenging aspect of being an entrepreneur and starting a company. So if you think back to when you were raising capital for GoZim for the first time, is there anything you wish you had known at the time that you didn't know?
I would say, I think, so I'll add some color there. That's an interesting question. So I'll just give some color first, and perhaps something more definitive will come to me. But when we started raising capital, really part of the initial strategy was to focus on investors who were very familiar with the model, right? So we actually didn't really target Western investors, right? We mostly targeted, and Raphael led a lot of these discussions with his background in kind of in the region, Southeast Asia. So we focused on investors who were very familiar with what Grab has done and what Gojek has done in Southeast Asia, right? So when you talk to these investors, it's easier for them to kind of visualize what we're trying to do. If you're talking to an investor from the West, where there are no super apps, right? There's no real comparison point. It's very hard for them to conceptualize, for some investors, I should say, for them to conceptualize what you're trying to do. So we actually strategically didn't focus a lot of our time there. We went to just where the business model just is common in life, right? So we just went to that region and that's where we sold the story. I think it resonates. I think our initial results proved that our model is correct. Surely Corona is, has thrown a wrench in some things, but ultimately, kind of the initial learning for us was to have a strategy that's defensible, that makes sense when it comes to fundraising. Not every investor is going to be interested, amenable to every idea. Some investors have interest relative to industry, relative to stage, but for us, kind of the key differentiator for us was just the how familiar are you with these models already, right? If you already know, if I have to tell you about Gojek success or Grab success, it's probably not the case that you'll ultimately be serious about investing in Gozen. But if you're already familiar with Grab and Gojek, if you already know what they've been able to do in terms of creating that core asset, leveraging it across various verticals, then it's very interesting for us to say, here's a similar opportunity in an untapped market where we have the opportunity to create a similarly strong brand across new users who are getting on the internet for the first time, right? So these are very relatable things for those who understand the business model that we're trying to replicate.
Yeah, so much of it is about finding the right partner really for the right project. And one of the things we often hear in Francophone Africa is there just aren't that many partners out there to find. When you look at sort of the venture capital reports that came out this year from Tech Ventures and Disrupt Africa and WeTracker, there aren't any Francophone African countries in the top 10 destinations there. So I suppose my first question is, why do you think that is? Why do you think we often have this narrative that the VC ecosystem is not, and the tech ecosystem is not as strong as Francophone Africa is Francophone?
Yeah, no. So I think I would start with our tech ecosystem, right? Just, I guess I could speak from anecdotes and from data we've looked at. In terms of data, a good place, to start is kind of the SeedStars has an index that tracks kind of entrepreneurial ecosystems, right? And Francophone Africa ranks relatively poor in some of these dimensions there. But ultimately, the takeaway there, I would say, is that just culturally, in the region, it's not yet the case that the best students, best thinkers, the best potential entrepreneurs go into entrepreneurship, right? There's not been successes. No one's really gotten rich doing entrepreneurship in these markets. So the best students kind of de-risk and, try to the path to success and to, making a living tends to be, joining a telco, joining a bank, something more stable, right? So there just haven't been many kind of success stories in entrepreneurship in the region. So it's kind of logical that if you're a strong student, a strong potential entrepreneur, perhaps you're not really interested in the model because you haven't seen anyone be successful in it, right? So there's kind of this aspect of culture and just role models. And I think just beyond that, perhaps this anecdote doesn't always hold true. But for the markets we see, at least like for Togo, for example, just in terms of the energy, you go to Nairobi, you go to Lagos, there's a kind of just a hustle and bustle, right? In parts of Francophone Africa, it's less the case. Not that people aren't hustling, but it's certainly just less of this dynamic kind of everyday energy, right? So I think this kind of affects people's perceptions, right? So on the perception side of investors looking at it, I'm an investor that comes to Lagos, I say, wow, this place is buzzing. If I go to Nairobi, this place is buzzing. If I go to Lomé, I don't get the same buzz. So I might come away thinking that Lomé is is less entrepreneurial. There's less opportunity here, but that's not necessarily the case. So you have this mix of the two, I would say. But I would think, thankfully, I think this is kind of starting to change. You mentioned Partech. You know, Partech itself has, I think, a base or an office in Dakar. So you start to see some VCs like Partech who are based in Francophone Africa. You have SeedStars who is, you know, actively trying to accelerate the region, I would say. You have initiatives like Afrique Excel, which was the, what, 2 years ago maybe? 1 year ago, the initiative, I think, like an accelerator there. So you have these things going on. You have some companies like Quant Afrique, which is the big classified platform. I think they're across like 10, 11 countries now in the across Francophone, Western Central Africa. You have InTouch, the payments aggregator, who have raised, these two companies have raised significant amounts of venture capital, right? So it's not that it's completely barren, right? There's activity in the region, but I think just, so I would say on the one hand, so it's a growing region, but for the entrepreneurs there now, there's not a lot of interest. On the flip side, there's not a lot of entrepreneurs there now. Now for folks who are innovators and folks who are, you know, who seek opportunity in various forms, there's it becomes very interesting, right? Because I think for the aggressive entrepreneurs that you have in Nigeria's of the world and the Kenya's of the world, there's still the language barrier is actually a bigger barrier than it should be, right? Folks really don't, even folks in Nigeria don't often think about expanding to Benin, which is just next door. Part of it is just if I'm in Nigeria, which has, you know, quote unquote, 200 million people, why should I look at Benin, which has 11 million people? So that's one part of it. But the other part of it is just, you know, there's a language, I don't speak French. So regardless of what the opportunity might look like in Benin, I'm just not interested because it's just too problematic for me to work with a partner who knows French or to learn French myself. So this creates a unique opportunity, I think, for in certain industries for innovators who are kind of intrepid, who are willing to adapt, willing to be flexible, and willing to kind of operate in these contexts, right? So I think there's really an untapped market just overall, especially when you take a view of Francophone Africa as a zone, right? If you take a view of country by country, I think you just will not be particularly interested in the opportunity, right? So again, Lagos alone is bigger than Senegal, the country, right? So it's similar in size to Ivory Coast, similar in size to Cameroon. So if you look at these things as country by country or city by city, it's probably less appealing. But if you start from day one to think about this as a cluster or as a zone, it becomes very, very exciting, very interesting. You start to see, hey, you know, it's in the, what is the zone called? The zone that ECOWAS zone, right? People have freedom of movement, right? You don't really need, you know, a lot of paperwork to work in as a Nigerian to work in Benin, as a Beninois to work in Togo. You don't need a lot. You just free. There's a lot of freedom of movement, freedom of labor, right? So these are things that you probably wouldn't figure out until you start exploring the opportunity. But I think that, you know, so it's, I think the day is coming where you will have a lot of interest in Francophone West Africa. But honestly, I think the big first thing I mentioned is probably a big barrier, right, to entrepreneurs, where you don't have a lot of role models who have had success. So it's hard for you to picture success doing that, right? At least in Kenya and Nigeria, you have some role models from entrepreneurship that it makes sense for you to think about, right? So that's kind of just a petite view on Francophone West Africa.
And is there anything you think we sort of need to, or would be good to see happen that would begin to create a more friendly ecosystem for entrepreneurs? Is it more incubators? Is it tech hubs? Is it the government that needs to you know, create?
So all of the above, actually. So I think it is incubators, it is tech hubs, and it is both of them with the support of the government, right? So if you look at the Togo example, right, or the Togo experience is an example, you see this, right? So the government is supporting something called the Janta Hub, which is kind of a innovation hub, which is supported financially by the government, where they're trying to push the idea of tech entrepreneurship in the Togolese ecosystem, right? I think there's two other smaller, non-affiliated with the government incubators in Togo, in Lomé as well, right? So I think this is starting to happen, but you know, to your point, I think what absolutely needs to happen to accelerate it is to have more folks kind of talking, teaching the opportunity, right? I think there's kind of a, you know, I think perhaps there's a perception of it being foreign, right? It's just, it's from a young person who is used to the opportunity and the safety net of pursuing a banking career or creating a telco, perhaps is kind of daunting or you know, unfamiliar to pursue a path in entrepreneurship, especially if I don't know anyone doing it, right? So if you have kind of these centers, these hubs, this, you know, you have some local leaders kind of explaining the idea, teaching about the idea, teaching about the opportunity, then I think you will have more uptake on it as people start to see. I think, you know, perhaps it's natural for, you know, the Anglophone markets, you know, people, you know, it kind of goes to what I was saying. People look to the West as a model, you know, the West, you know, the U.S. has, you know, your Zuckerbergs of the world, your big tech bro entrepreneurs are, you know, largely English speaking. Right. So there's kind of a natural sense of, hey, he did it. You know, I could visualize myself doing it to some degree, even if I'm in a different market. Perhaps it's me, you know, but I'm not too well, certainly even globally, the European French speaking world of entrepreneurship is not as splashy as the Anglophone world. So perhaps there's less of those role models. But, you know, to answer your question, yes, I think it's people localizing the opportunity and becoming those role models locally. And I think the, you know, government has a role to play. I'm not too familiar with the various models of government backing the innovation hubs. But, I know at least within Togo, it's nice to see. I think there's a strong opportunity for them to lead, and they're taking the opportunity there.
And you haven't encountered it. Have you encountered any significant sort of regulatory issues with government at all? I mean, I'm thinking what we saw in Lagos recently with new regulations coming in around motorbikes that, you know, seriously impacted Max and G and Gokada, similar businesses over there. Have you encountered anything similar in the markets you're in, or are you not too concerned about that kind of?
Well, I think we're certainly aware of regulatory issues and the regulatory regime and the markets we operate in. I think just to, you know, sometimes the question comes up, why did we start with Togo? So we started with Togo very intentionally. I think part of the reason goes to the regulations, right? So we looked at the Togolese market relative to ride hailing, specifically motorcycle ride hailing, and the key regulation on the books, though it wasn't enforced at the time, was just having the driver using a helmet and the passenger using a helmet as well. So we kind of introduced this idea to the market before we came to the market. It was relatively rare to see passengers wearing helmets, but now it's more common as Gozem has pioneered that, right? So that was a key regulation that we saw in Togo. But besides that, we were relatively free to operate. Right. We've since pioneered some things, you know, gone above and beyond what the regulation requires, just for the interest of safety of our users. But in terms of, bans or, you know, hurdles for operations in Togo specifically, there were none. And that's why we chose there. As we move upscale, right? So you move from a Togo, which is kind of a lab in some respects, where we're able to build out our operational playbooks, understand what works, what doesn't. As we now have set some of those things in stone and we move to Benin, which is a bigger, more dynamic market than Togo, we now, in some it tends to be city by city. Some cities we've run across some more hurdles. So just one example, as you go from Togo to Benin, in Togo you can operate freely. In Benin you now need a specific jacket with a number on it if you're a driver of a motorcycle taxi. So you have regulations start to come into play at this level, right? So what you wear the jacket in Cotonou is different than the jacket in Porto-Novo, which is different than the jacket in Paracou and so forth, right? So as we now move to bigger markets, we expect the regulation to come more and more into play. But again, it's part of, you know, our strategy. We understand this, right? This is also part of the reason we did not go to a Nigerian day one, because, you know, there's not a real opportunity to learn in Nigeria. Or I should say, there's an opportunity to learn, but it's very expensive, right? So Nigeria is not the market you want to go to learn, right? You want to do your learning in another market. And then by the time you get to Nigeria, you want to have things figured out where you just execute it, right? So, and part of that is also the regulations of the regulatory environment.
Mecca, I've just got a couple more questions for you and I'll let you go. Just looking to the future and what's next. So firstly, what are you most excited about for GoZem in the next sort of 12 months? What's exciting you at the moment?
Yeah, no. So I think for us, what's exciting, just 12 months or not, I think what's particularly exciting to me is just the opportunity to create a brand where nothing existed before, right? So I think that's something, you know, if you look at the digital space, that's something that, you know, not necessarily you could do every day. And what I mean by that is that for almost over 90% of our drivers, we are the first app that they're using, right? So whether you think about, for a lot of our drivers, they didn't have smartphones before GoZem. So we're able to introduce them to smartphones through financing programs and so forth, right? So we're getting a wide group of drivers online for the first time. We're being the first app they use and introducing them to a way to make money that's linked to kind of the internet and the digital space, right? So that's something that's interesting to me. On the user side, as I mentioned, you have a lot of people who potentially use the, Facebook apps, right? So Instagram and so forth, WhatsApp and so forth, but they have never really used local content. So for us, it's very interesting as, you know, whether you call it first mover advantage or what have you, we are, for a lot of users, the first real local content provider they have, right? They could go open the GoZem app, press a button, and see a physical car, motorcycle, taxi, something arrives physically, right? So it's very much local content that folks didn't have. So for us, I think there's a unique opportunity as being the first experience for a user in a market as with something like this to create a real brand in the region, right? So that's what I'm particularly excited about. Just what will the GoZem brand be in Togo and Benin and the region in, 12 months and 24 months and 36 months, right? So today you could use GoZem as you go from, Cotonou to Lomé. But potentially, very soon we want to say as you go to Douala, use the same GoZem app. As you go to Libreville, use the same GoZem app. As you go to Lagos, eventually the same GoZem app. As you go to Kinshasa, same GoZem app. So we want to really that's what's exciting to me, right? And how will the brand develop? How do we kind of continue to create value for our users? And how do those users reward us for creation of that value in terms of, acceptance of our brand?
And my last question for you is a short one. What's the tech trend in Africa that you are most excited about now? If you were going to be investing in something, what would you be looking at as a sort of potential next big thing?
Yeah, it's interesting. So I think about this. I write myself sometimes. I write a Substack newsletter, and part of what I write there recently is an article on this. So it's not necessarily a tech trend, but it's kind of how to think about venture opportunities, right, in Africa, right? So for me, it's kind of five buckets. If I was investing in Africa today, or if I was starting a venture in Africa today, that I would think about. And kind of for me is the base layer is creating infrastructure, right? So think about companies that really come in into the market and create real infrastructure, right? So for me, this is a company like Interswitch, creating a financial payments switch infrastructure where none exists before. And even to some degree, Kobo 360, right? So interstate, inter-country logistics, creating that infrastructure in Nigeria, starting with the companies in Nigeria as well, right? So just companies that create infrastructure is kind of one bucket that I think about. A second bucket is kind of countries that integrate fragmented markets, right? So you have a lot of different, you know, there's market fragmentation just across the continent. So what are countries doing? What are different companies doing to kind of just aggregate these markets and make it easier to do business, right? So there's, I think for me, Flutterwave's a good example. If you want, I could talk about the difference between aggregation and kind of the infrastructure. But to me, it's kind of the separate activities. The third bucket after that for me is kind of just reducing that friction, right? So again, it's just how do I make doing business easier? Right. So there's for me, a typical example here is kind of the Cars 45, which is the online used market car marketplace. Right. So you have you could buy a car in, you know, in West Africa, but it's a lot easier to buy a car with, you know, they've taken out a lot of the friction points of buying a car. So for me, it's kind of, you know, what companies are also reducing friction. Beyond that, I would say there's also kind of the fourth bucket there is companies that create entrepreneurship opportunities, right? For me, this is where I visualize GoZem in this bucket. And I think there's just a lot of opportunity for these companies to create rapid scale and to create impact at the same time, right? So for us, we have our champions, which again is what we call our drivers. We're creating real economic opportunities for them that didn't necessarily exist before, right? So now they are with GoZem. You know, they were drivers before, the vast majority of them, but it was kind of relatively inefficient. You know, with GoZem, they have now a reliable, efficient way to earn, you know, whereas before, maybe they spent 40% of every hour without a client or looking for a client. Now they have clients back to back to back to back. So the utilization of their vehicles is just a lot better and their earning power is just a lot better, right? But beyond GoZem, you have companies like Paystack in this bucket, even kind of the agent networks of the telcos and even mobile money agent networks where the end agent is a micro entrepreneur who gets a cut of every transaction he does. So to me, this is something that's particularly interesting. It's what we're doing with GoZem, and it has a lot of tremendous opportunity to scale. Finally, you have things like the fifth bucket for me is just ventures that create new markets, right? So this is relatively rare. You know, not a lot of people are doing this, but one classic example is M-Pesa. So when M-Pesa launched, there was no real real market for mobile money, right? M-Pesa introduced mobile money and digital financial services and just created a new market where it didn't exist before. So those are the kind of five buckets of investment activity that I would think about. They're, you know, not really related to tech in, explicitly, but tech kind of enables, you know, the ultimate goal. So that's creating infrastructure, kind of aggregating fragmented markets. It's reducing friction. It's enabling entrepreneurship and creating new markets.
There you go. You heard it here first. thank you so much for coming on today. It's been a real pleasure to have you.
Thank you, Eleanor.
If people want to keep up with you, they can do that on LinkedIn and on Twitter.
Yeah, so LinkedIn for sure, professionally. It's my first initial last name, linkedin.com/in/EAJENE, or Twitter as well, which is twitter.com/EAJENE. And again, the newsletter I mentioned is, afridigest.substack.com. So if you have any questions, comments, I'm eager to hear them. And again, thank you for your time, Eleanor. I really enjoyed the conversation.